Oh, long day. Just did my taxes and probably gonna have to do some laundry in a little while. Oh, hold on a second. I'm getting a phone call. It's an unknown number. I don't know who this is. Hello?
Hi, is this the Bad Science Request Hotline?
Bad Science Request Hotline? I don't think that... I mean, yeah, this is Bad Science, but how did you get this number?
I just wanted to put in a request. If you could talk about Ice Age, the first one.
Okay, but...
That's my favorite movie. What?
No, I like Ice Age 2, but I'm a little bit confused. Did you find this number? No,
Ice Age 1.
I know. I'm saying I like Ice Age as well. I'm asking you if you found this number online or through... How did you get... Did someone send you this number?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I was thinking that maybe you could have someone on talk about, like, if it's real or not. I think it is real, actually. Oh, and the squirrel.
Okay, thank you. I will, sure, I'll do this
episode.
I'll do this episode about Ice Age, but please don't share this number with anyone and tell me, what website did you find this on? Where did you find this number?
Craigslist?
Bad Science.
Craigslist?
Did the movie get it right?
Craigslist?
Bad Science.
Craigslist?
Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburgh, and today we're talking about 2002's Ice Age. Ray Romano, John Leguizamo, Dennis Leary. Yeah, Ice Age. Today I have two fantastic guests. One I've grown up with, so it's a pleasure to have you here in the studio. A part of me is here sitting beside me. I feel like it's musician, comedian, member of the Cooties, of course, and co-host of the new hit fake financial comedy music podcast, Success Express, Eric Jackowitz.
Wow.
Whoa.
What an intro.
Should I say your middle name?
Yes.
Eric Julian Jackowitz.
Mm.
I just know too much about you. I could make this intro so long and detailed and embarrassing, probably.
You could.
You want that?
Come on.
He loves blueberry chocolate weed edibles. Eric Julian Jackowitz.
Not on one right now, but...
We'll do one after the show.
Absolutely.
And drive a vehicle.
No.
Come on. So you're doing good. You're having a great time.
I'm doing great.
You got your water. You got your sparkling water.
I got a black cherry sparkling water.
I also went with the black cherry sparkling water.
Whoa.
Excellent choice. We are meant to be together today.
Already have so much in common.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So black cherry sparkling water twin here.
Yeah.
We have a senior preparator at the La Brea Tar Pits and the current excavation, Project 23, Laura Tewksbury.
Yep. Hi. That's
Hi.
Me.
I said that right? I said
you
everything?
You did. Everything's okay. Correct. You're perfect.
Pretty rare. Didn't mess up. A good start. Okay, so let's talk about Ice Age because Eric and I watched this last night together. I think if I'm speaking for both of us, we had not seen this since it came out, right?
Wow. I'd never seen it, period.
Oh, Eric had never seen it, period. So,
congratulations. Well,
thank you.
Yeah, you went through it.
I got through it.
What was your take on Ice Age?
Well,
bad start.
I thought it was a movie.
Yeah, it was definitely, definitely a film.
A movie.
Yeah.
And it was a running time of 93 minutes or so. And I thought it was okay.
Okay. A sterling review.
Yes.
Thank you, Eric. And detailed.
That's okay. You could tell that it was like immediately after Toy Story. That DreamWorks set up an animation department pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah. It was the first Blue Sky Studios production.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it looks like The Sims or like a
right.
or like a computer game.
Yeah.
So that was kind of funny.
Yeah, it did kind of look like a Grand Theft Auto cutscene.
Yes, the whole movie looked like a video game. Max Payne, early like Xbox.
With really good fur.
Yeah, yeah. The fur.
With great fur and good snow.
Yes.
Yes, and at night or the rain, I felt like it did look really good.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Texture is very good.
Yes.
So that's what I thought about it.
Okay, great. Laura, did you see it when it first came out? What were your impressions then? What are your impressions now?
So I did see it when it first came out, and I remember because I had just been starting to work with Ice Age-type animals, and anytime I told people that I was working with those things, they're like, oh, dinosaurs, and I was like, no. So I remember specifically when that movie came out because all of a sudden people had this concept. They're like, oh, like mammoths and sloths? And I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, okay.
So it was very nice to finally have this frame of reference. Prince. And yes, I remember watching it for the first time being like, I love Three Men and a Baby. And now you added Ice Age Animals and it makes me so happy.
I said that last night. Yeah. I was like, this is like Three Men and a Baby, yeah. but animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And cold.
Very true. It was really all about that baby.
Updated for an ancient audience.
Absolutely.
That was an Ice Age joke, not the age of the people. Children are not ancient.
Right.
I know Ted Danson personally and he's offended.
Yeah. Oh, no. Just but he has such wonderful bow ties.
I know.
Okay.
So sad.
But I will also say that it is a regular movie that we watch in our break area.
Oh.
Because my volunteers know that they are stuck with me and my choices.
So it's definitely Ice one. Age. If you're playing it, okay.
I do.
Great.
And we've basically watched it in pieces all week long this week.
Yeah.
Including with director commentary.
Wow.
Because I was like, I just really want to do research. I want to remember everything.
Yeah.
And my volunteers were laughing at me because I still laugh every time I'm supposed to laugh. I still cry every time I'm supposed to cry.
Wow.
I am the target audience
that?
For this movie.
I want to ask you about that because I felt, usually I'm a easy crier with these movies, mm-hmm. animated movies. Like when they want me to cry, the music starts up. I know that they want
I
me to do it.
I can attest to this. We watched Coco together and cried in each other's arms.
Yeah, several times. It works every time with me, but in this movie, and I don't know if I was in the wrong state of mind or what, but people are crying in the movie.
Right.
Like, they show Ray Romano's character, Woolly Mammoth, what's his
tearing
name?
Tearing up.
Manny,
thank you. Yeah, tearing. You see tears in his eyes, and then there's a part later where you see tears in the Neanderthal's eyes. So that took me out of it
Maybe
for some reason.
Maybe they were forcing you to cry, being like, here's when to cry because this character's crying.
Yeah, yeah. That upset me a little bit. I was like, hey, listen, man, I cry on my own. I don't need
you. You don't need to tell me when to cry.
Spoon feed me tears.
I'm going to cry on my own. Whenever I want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Via music cue.
Which the music was amazing.
Yeah.
But I will also say that part of that could be that they were making it more for a children's audience as well, trying to give them social cues.
I don't know what you mean. I felt it was an adult film, and I took it very seriously.
Well, I believe it was originally intended to be more of an adult dramedy.
You're right.
Really?
I read that, yes. Yeah. And then Fox said no, unless they make it a children's comedy.
Yes.
Do you think they added the rodent in the beginning and like throughout the movie to make it more childlike, and they made everything else. You know this?
I know why they added it, because it's in the director commentary I just watched.
Of course.
Because originally they were concerned that the whole like first 37 minutes of the movie they didn't have any ice and lots of snow in it, and they were worried that audience expectation coming into a movie called Ice Age would want to see ice immediately.
Yes,
so the scrat was actually all to try to have a way to have ice and snow in the very beginning, and then it ended up testing so well in audiences that they brought it back for multiple scenes. Anytime you had this like more dramatic moment, they would like sneak in a little comedy with scrat to kind of lighten it back up again.
I like scrat.
Me too. I like scrat as well. We performed at the Montreal Comedy Festival, and on the streets of Montreal during this festival, there's like these French Canadian silent performers with like big eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are like making huge gestures. And I was like, this is like a French Canadian muskrat street performer guy.
It's true.
Yeah. He was amazing.
It was great. It was a lot more. And I think the director's daughter or somebody's daughter came up with the idea.
That's
and, like,
my understanding, yes.
Okay, yeah. They like, she combined a squirrel and a rat, and they're like, oh, you should make a scrat character.
Really? So that wasn't a real animal?
That's actually a fun fact, too, because at the time, no, it was not a real animal. But since then, actually around the time the movie came out, a discovery was made down in Argentina. This very ancestral, it's not a squirrel, it's not a rat, but it looks vaguely like the scrat animal.
Okay.
And so even the scientists at the time were like, hey, look, we found a scrat. And it's this really ancient ancestral mammal that is vaguely saber-toothed scroll rat look.
Whoa.
Interesting.
So Ice Age predicted scrat.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's definitely what happened.
Hot take. okay, so I want to talk to you about the Tar Pits. How did you get into this? I read a little bit of your bio, and it said that you were, like, interested in this from a very young age, from, like, age 4. Is that correct?
That is true.
Okay, so what happened at age 4 that made you interested?
Did you fall into a tar pit?
I did not.
Okay.
Fortunately. That would have been very messy for my poor parents to clean up.
Yes. Yeah, and unfortunately for us, because that would have been a great story.
Yes.
Yes. Well, they probably could have taken my shoes off and lifted me out.
Right.
I was definitely one of those four-year-olds. I feel like very classic four-year-old where just into ancient things, period.
Oh.
And I think I just never really got out of that phase.
Okay.
And so I also love dinosaurs. I just don't work with them much.
Okay. And you're sick of people asking.
It's one of those things that people are like, oh, they're the only extinct things ever. And I'm like, not really.
Right.
But let's talk about more.
Yeah.
It's true. And but so it was one of those things where I started out and my parents were like, cool, whatever you want to do, we'll support you in that. And I had a lot of opportunities growing up in Orange County. Because we're in California, there's a lot of legislation where you have to protect non-renewable resources that belong to everybody that are on construction sites.
Okay.
But then that also means that you have to actually do something with all of those fossils.
Right.
So a lot of the schools in the area are able to work on some of those fossils. I was actually able to work on fossils from high school and then through junior college.
Whoa.
Oh, cool.
Like during school?
Like I would go off site for some of them, but one of them was actually at a local elementary school. I was able to go volunteer at and help teach curriculum.
Wow.
And
whoa.
Work on fossils.
That's pretty sweet.
So I started out in mostly...
And what does that mean? Sorry, work on fossils? Like you like helping dig them up or clean them or...
Mostly prepare them at that stage was things that had already been dug up from a construction site that were in the way of progress, capital P, and that had been transported offsite for future study and preparation. Mm-hmm. And so I worked on unwrapping those presents and revealing the gifts inside and stabilizing them for future research and study.
Wow. And I mean, why there's like an abundance of this stuff in Southern California, right?
Yes.
Why is that?
Yeah. Hollywood?
Well, a lot of it's just kind of the happens.
Spielberg prank.
It's partly the just so happens of what types of rocks that we have eroding at the surface and the near surface where we're trying to build things like construction, but then also the fact that we protect so much. Hmm. If you go other places, there's fossils all over the place, but they aren't always as protected as they are in California.
Because it's like a state legislature?
It's one of those where sometimes it's like, oh, that's in the way.
And what do they do with it? They throw it in the garbage?
Sometimes.
Throwing fossils in the garbage? Call out what states are doing this.
I'm not going to do that.
I mean,
they know who they are.
Does it rhyme with Wisconsin
or Schmorida?
But at the same time, fossils are incredibly rare. But you can find them in all sorts of different places, but they tend to be localized where certain types of rocks are at the surface, which is also why I don't find things like T-Rex in Los Angeles, because our surface rocks are millions of years younger than that. And even if you're going down into much of Orange County, a lot of those are only like, you know, 15 to 35 million years old. So that's mostly when we're underwater. So mostly whales and things like that.
Yeah.
So that's what I started on a lot.
Does that make you feel insignificant at all that you're working with these things that are millions of years old?
It's a combination of insignificant and super important.
Okay.
Because every single grain of sand I move, I get to be the first human being ever in the history of everything to find out what was behind that grain of sand. So I get to dig for buried treasure for my job. So that's pretty cool.
It's pretty sick.
Yeah, that's really sick.
Super humble about it, too.
I've never done anything for the first time.
No, I'm just a sheep.
We take volunteers.
Okay.
All right. Field trip.
We're listening. So we can go dig somewhere or like...
There is a time commitment.
Pickaxe.
But the bulk of our workforce is made out of volunteers. And they do pretty much all the excavation work that we do, just less of the paperwork.
And what do you mean time commitment?
Usually it's the same day, 9 to 5, every week for at least 3 months or so.
Sounds like physical labor.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Me neither.
I mean, A, I'm weak, but B, I don't really have the time. 9 to 5 every day.
No. Well, some of it's also like tiny work with dental tools and that sort of thing.
Oh, okay. That's fine. I do that to my mouth. So
he gives himself a little bathroom dentistry.
Yeah. It's like I'm digging up fossils, but they're my teeth every time.
But they're little cavities and holes.
Aw.
And little pieces of garlic.
Okay, so you're into it as a kid, you're doing it in high school, and then did you always, like, have an interest in the tar pit specifically, or?
Tar pits, when I was 10, my parents were like, okay, you get to go on a field trip anywhere you want for your birthday, and I was like, I want to go to the tar pits.
Wow.
And so we drove up, and, you know, we visited Hollywood and things while we were here.
Sure.
But it was always one of those places where I was like, okay, I want to go back again. And then, so in 2000, I believe 6, when King Tut was at LACMA next door to the tar pits, my family was like, we're going to go see King Tut. And I was like, well, you better believe we can't be next to the tar pits and not visit it. And we went over and I was like, wait, you can volunteer? And so starting in 2006, I started out volunteering.
Wow.
And my lovely parents, because I hadn't been driving myself yet, would drive me 75 miles each way.
Oh my God.
To go and volunteer. I did get my license relatively quickly, you can understand. But
you were committed. And so were your parents. Hats off to them.
Yeah.
They're
supportive.
They're
really
great.
Cool. So let's talk about the actual tar pits for a second, because I was doing some research and realized that I know so little about these tar pits. I basically just have like a picture in my mind. Eric and I were actually there once a few years ago, I feel like.
Yep.
And we didn't learn anything that I can recall, but we were there.
We took a photo.
Yep. So there's that. That's probably what most people do now that I'm thinking about
it. Yeah.
But let's try and dig deeper, pun intended. So what is, first of all, tar? Like, from what I understand, that's very bad for you. So are people, like, working there near the tar, can that kill you if you breathe that in? How does that work?
And what is a pit?
Yeah.
Also.
So, fun fact, I'm going to back it up and explain that there actually aren't any tar pits at the tar pits.
Okay.
I'm leaving.
I'll see you later.
So, in summary, so when you actually say the La Brea tar pits, it translates from the Spanish to the tar pits. So, part of the reason that tar stuck around as the name is that translation from Spanish, from Brea. But technically what we have at the tar pits is asphalt, which is the crudest form of naturally occurring oil. And all of Los Angeles Basin is actually a series of oil fields.
Oh.
That's just an area where that crude oil has been coming up to the surface for tens of thousands of years.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So it naturally seeps up. Mm. The pits that you see are old excavation sites where people like me left a big hole in the ground. And because that oil's under the ground in areas high That's pressure, looking went. For low pressure,
wow.
it's like, oh, I'll fill up here.
Whoa.
So I thought it was a naturally occurring.
It is.
It sort of is.
But it's been modified. Yes. So asphaltic seeps. I don't think the name's going to stick.
Asphaltic seeps?
Is more accurate than tar pits.
La Brea asphaltic seeps? Well, La Brea is still saying tar, right?
Yes.
So you can't even say that.
Asphaltic seeps.
The asphaltic seeps.
God bless you. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
But
I like accuracy, though.
Me too.
But yeah, so crude oil, and that's also what the bubbling that you see. Mm-hmm. In case there is anybody that saw the movie Volcano.
Oh, yeah.
Never saw it.
Tommy Lee
Not
Jones.
Really that close to magma. It doesn't ride, it doesn't call. It's really more that the lighter grades of oil are bubbling up with the cruder grades of oil. So things like methane, if you have a gas stove at home, that's right. what the kind of gas.
Okay.
That's what causes the bulk of the bubbling that
so
you see.
So it is bad for you.
Yeah, you don't want to ingest it. You don't want to smoke around it. You don't want to, like...
You could explode?
It's the tar pits?
It's less that you would explode. You'd really need to concentrate it. You'd have to be, like, one of the storage rooms at the Ross Dress for Less up the street from us back in, I think, 85, had a methane leak in one of their storage rooms.
What?
That did explode.
Whoa.
Which is also part of the reason why they were like, hey, let's have gas monitors in all the buildings in this area.
Yeah.
So.
Good idea.
Yeah.
So.
Safety.
How it exploded just because it was near the...
Because, again, all of Los Angeles Basin is a series of oil fields.
Oh,
so it's not just the tar pits. We're just the place that people think of it. But even if you drive down Fairfax, La Cienega, towards LAX from the tar pits, you're going to see them drilling for oil all across there.
Wow.
It's just not what people think of anymore. But it's part of the reason why Los Angeles is such a big city so quickly is that we had good PR and oil.
Palm trees and oil. So you mentioned Volcano.
Yes.
Let's just talk about that movie. No, I'm kidding. No,
what year did that movie come out?
Let's talk about John Lee Jones' career. No, I wanted to ask you about, there's a scene in Ice Age where there's a bunch of lava flowing what looks like through ice.
Yes.
So
I had this question as well.
Yeah. What is that, just DreamWorks, Blue Sky making something cool looking for a movie? Or did that happen at that time?
Can lava and ice coexist?
Yes.
Not happily long term, but I feel like there probably are places that have glaciers that also are sensensitive under the ground.
Oh.
So I'm sure there is somewhere where lava and ice meet, just not anywhere that I know of exactly. But it's one of those things that's it's plausible.
Okay.
I'm sure there's somewhere that, you know, lava comes up wherever it wants to and says, hey, and there's a glacier. It's like, no, please.
Right. And so that wouldn't happen for very long is what you're saying. So like either the lava would eventually
erupt and then melt the ice.
Or vice versa, like the ice
probably depends on the amount of pressure, like how much lava, how thick of a glacier, because glaciers are absolutely ginormous.
Right.
Technical term, sorry.
Yeah, no, please. I'm trying to learn more here in the podcast.
Absolutely.
So ginormous means big.
Yes.
Got it. great. So, yeah, there
really,
was
a... Really, really bing-bong huge is actually...
that's the scientific term.
Yeah.
I was trying to avoid jargon.
Right, sorry.
Listen, if you have to say really, really bing-bong, please go ahead.
Please.
We want to be accurate here. Okay, so that leads me to geysers as well. There's like an Old Faithful joke in Ice
yes.
Age. And so...
Not really... I think Romano said, like, not really faithful, is it? Or what was the line?
I don't remember the line.
He said something like, not exactly Old Faithful, is it? And it was, like, not that big of a geyser,
oh, small geyser
moment.
Okay. I don't recall.
Yeah.
But...
Which, also, that joke doesn't make sense because Old right. Faithful was probably named Old Faithful...
Way after.
Dare I say years after yes. the Ice Age.
Yeah, really, really bing bong long time after Ice
exactly.
Age.
Exactly.
So geysers like shoot up a bunch of boiling water, and does this also happen like everywhere or
Again, nowhere that I work at. So it's one okay. of those places that you have to go somewhere with a lot more volcanic activity close to the surface.
Got it.
So LA, not one of those places you're gonna have.
Okay.
We're not good. That exciting.
Where's Old Faithful? Yosemite?
That's my Yellowstone?
Yellowstone.
Maybe? Oh my gosh, sure, I can't believe
probably.
I don't remember this.
I need to go visit these places. I haven't yes. I haven't seen them, so I don't know.
I went to Tahoe this weekend.
See any geysers?
Nope.
Sounds good. So all the animals at the beginning of the film are moving together. They're all like migrating south, mm-hmm. it seems. Is that accurate that they would join forces, so to speak, or would they all like have their own way of migrating? Or is there massive migrations?
While we do have evidence of migrating in a lot of the large animals, which may have, you know, coincided with a couple other large groups of animals, because part of the reason you'd be migrating is to get more resources if resources are getting scarcer where you are. Mm-hmm. So if resources for this animal are getting scarcer and it's on the same plant as the resources that animal is getting, it's possible some of these are fluctuating together.
Okay.
But we don't have... as many large migrators necessarily in Los Angeles that we find at the tar pits. The main ones are probably things like bison.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Some of the other animals may have been around more year round. It's hard to know because we don't get that level of clarity in the fossils. Bison most likely did migrate though, and we have good evidence for that because they all tend to have babies all at the same time, just like a lot of modern bison do. And so we tend to only find bison fossils of very specific age groups.
Okay.
So it's like 2 to 6 month olds, year and 2 to 6 month olds. So it's likely that they're only here and getting trapped during certain times of year.
Got you. Okay.
Wonder how much of that is instinctual.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because all the animals were leaving, did they just know that, okay, the Ice Age is coming?
Right. They were talking about it
go?
In the movie. But
right.
Well, there were many.
Because usually when animals, like, all go somewhere in a movie, it's because aliens are coming.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you ever seen the movie Dreamcatcher?
Yes. based on Stephen King's work.
That's how they knew aliens were coming, because every type of animal was moving a certain direction.
Yeah, I feel like that's a common trope, too, in movies, where, like, a dog will bark or a bird will freak out, and they're like, what's going on here? Something we don't understand.
Also, there was a spaceship frozen in the ice
that's
at
true.
One point.
Yes.
What was that about? Or in
it was foreshadowing to one of their sequels, actually.
Oh.
Really?
One of the
to
ice
my
age?
Understanding. I haven't seen it yet, but apparently that whole scene of everything frozen in the ice is all things that were then featured in later movies.
Whoa. Freaky blue sky.
Whoa.
They're clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
okay.
it.
Okay.
Okay, so let's talk about the main characters here. So we have Manny.
The Mammoth,
who is
yes.
our Mammoth, our Ray Romano character.
Everybody loves Manny.
Everyone loves Manny. He's a big papa, mama of character taking care of this baby.
Who often cries.
Yes,
he's
he
a
gets
big,
emotional.
Sappy guy.
And we all love him. And so... Now, I think because everyone loved him so much, apparently they're trying to recreate the mammoth. You know about this? You know what I'm talking about?
I've heard about this in other sites. Okay. So the thing is...
Like
so
Jurassic
again,
Park style?
I think so.
But slightly more plausible. But it's
more
one of those
plausible.
Things where the types of mammoths that we have in LA actually aren't woolly mammoths like Manny.
Oh.
They stayed in areas that, again, were colder, had more glaciers, that sense, those sorts of things. Whereas LA has always been much nicer. It's been a little cooler, a little wetter.
Mm.
And we have had also multiple ice ages through time. There's been a lot of climactic fluctuation through time, which is why migration wouldn't necessarily be, you know, an always thing. It might be a occasional thing. for those mass migrations that we were seeing in the movie. But there has been work trying to work to clone woolly mammoths.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where there's so many problems because not only do you have to actually get enough preserved, which they do have some absolutely beautiful specimens preserved in permafrost in areas like Siberia. Mm. We actually have currently on loan to us at the Tar Pits, part of a traveling exhibit. We have a replica of baby Yuba that was found in Siberia.
Okay.
So if you want to go see that, it's there through September.
I would love to see that.
And so, again, not a type of mammoth we find here, though there's some work lately that they may have been interacting with each other romantically around the boundaries where the different types of mammoths lived.
Okay.
But at least in L.A., we have purely Colombian mammoth to our knowledge.
Okay.
And but the woolly mammoth, because they're preserved in permafrost, these are things that soft tissues are preserved, which we don't get preserved at the Tar Pits. We just get things like teeth and bones.
Right.
But so they have a higher potential of recovering more genetic material.
Whoa.
But at the same time, even if you had an exactly perfect piece of genetic material, mm-hmm. so what are you mixing that with to make a viable embryo?
Right.
What type of carrier are you going to put that in the womb of?
Mm-hmm.
And then what type of hormones at what times is that mother going to be injecting into that baby?
Yeah.
And then who's raising it and what environment it is in?
That's a lot of good questions.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that you could make something that looks like that mammoth, but it still wouldn't precisely be that mammoth.
Yeah.
Is the problem. They're gone.
Seems
I'm sorry.
Dangerous.
Yeah, it seems like there's ethical questions here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So which side do you, because you must love mammoths, do you want to see a new mammoth or is it not worth all these risks?
If you could have a mammoth as a pet,
yeah.
would you?
Right.
For me, extinct animal that I would have as a pet is actually a dwarf pronghorn called Capramerix.
Yeah, that was going to be my answer, dwarf pronghorn.
If you think of like antelope in North America, we don't actually have antelope, we have pronghorn. There's
okay.
a dwarf version of those that I would be the classic LA girl with the oversized purse with the little head sticking out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that would be me if those were still around.
Whole little way.
Just walking around.
That would
going
be
going to Rodeo Drive
with a little mini
Absolutely.
Antelope head
yeah.
sticking out. That sounds great.
She's like, let it graze when we have some coffee. And
I want to go to Alfred and get a matcha.
The pronghorn sips it.
Absolutely. But at the same time, there's, again, a lot of conversations about resources because, again, all the resources you could bring into making something like a mammoth back mm-hmm. versus there are animals that are currently going extinct that, you know, how we make sure that we're managing those resources well
yeah.
to maybe protect some of them before they go extinct,
yeah,
before
yeah.
we'd have to worry about all of these other issues on how to bring them back.
So first step. Let's save endangered species. Maybe second step, bring
if
back
there's time,
extinct species.
Bring back the mammoth.
Let's be a little more picky and choosy on all of our resources, what it is. Like
okay.
there's even some creatures that are not doing well that I'm like, well, I still would rather focus on other animals. So.
Mm, like what? Let's name those.
What's like if you could resurrect any animal, what would it be?
Yeah, and if you could kill off any animal, what would that be?
Yeah.
Well, kill off would probably mean mosquitoes, but it would have such environmental impact, I probably shouldn't do it. But
could we kill off half?
Yeah, good call.
It wouldn't make a difference.
Just the annoying ones?
It wouldn't make a difference.
That's the problem.
Just the annoying ones.
They'd come right back.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, what about Eric's question? If you're going to bring back something, it would be that.
What would be
probably
pronghorn?
That dwarf pronghorn.
Well, no, that's as a pet. I mean, maybe like in the scientific community, is there a number one animal that's like
or flora, right? Flora or fauna. There's a lot of like extinct
plants or fossils
plants?
Too.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is there something that's at the top of the list?
I don't think we have a consensus on that one. Definitely not.
Okay.
No, sorry. I'm sure that there's lots of people yelling at me right now, but I'm like,
Well, that's pretty much what the
everyone's
internet
got their
is.
Own priorities.
Yeah.
It's just people yelling, pretty much.
It's the bathroom wall.
Well, I kind of hope they do bring back the mammoth. I didn't read that much into it, but supposedly they've been working on it for a bit, and
absolutely.
It's like a possible thing that could happen. And I think that's interesting because I'd love to see other extinct species come back. Apparently, some like version of a frog just went extinct like recently. I don't know if you
which
know
one?
Specifically which one. I can't remember, but I just. You know, it's like, come on, like you were saying, let's get it together and try and protect what we have here instead of just
because of
the coral
reasons.
Reefs. Yeah, yeah. There's the whole habitat is becoming destroyed. So,
right.
Anyways, we were talking very briefly before Eric got here about the saber-tooth cat.
Yes.
Because in the movie, there's just, and I think just in general, we all say saber-tooth tiger.
Yes.
Right. Diego. What's his name in the movie? And so. What's the, why is that a misconception? Why?
Well, for a long time, it was called a saber-toothed tiger. Okay. So that's very fair. Okay. But in more recent years, we've updated it because it's technically definitely not a tiger, and it's not even technically a quote-unquote true cat.
Whoa.
They're a whole true separate cat. Branch of the cat family tree called Machairodonts.
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 Cool.
Machairodon.
Yeah.
And so there's just a whole extinct branch of the family tree. Mm-hmm. And so the closest thing we have as a modern analog when we're describing it is cats, but they're not even technically quote-unquote
true cats.
So it's
just something we don't have anymore.
Yeah. And they're all gone.
Okay, that's sad. So why wouldn't we just call it Machairodon instead of trying to label it just so that we can understand?
I think it's just when you're, because again, that's
the
use of
La Brea tar pit, man.
Yeah.
The tar tar pit.
Common names versus
the tar 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 pit.
The tar 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 pit.
The tar 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 pit.
I think it's just, again, like common name versus scientific name. That's why scientific names we use standardized across the science so that me, researcher from Tibet and Argentina, are all going to be calling it the same thing.
Okay.
But when you're trying to just use common names, I think that's one of the ones that, you know, kind of whatever sticks originally sticks around for a long time.
Right, thank you,
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Oh, yeah.
So it's one of those where we're like, well, technically, like starfish, not a star, not a fish, but everyone calls it a starfish. And I'm not saying that it's, you know, the worst thing ever.
Linda Richman over here. Discuss.
Smilodon, then, is that synonymous with Machairodon? What is that?
Smilodon is a type of Machairodon.
Oh, okay. So it's like an umbrella term.
Yes.
There's different.
So Machairodon is the whole umbrella term of that
cat
species of.
It's not a cat. It's not a cat. It's not a tiger. It's just Machairodon.
It's cat.
It's cat-ish.
What about a jazz cat?
What's that?
So if I go to a jazz club and I say, hey, you guys are a bunch of swinging Machairodons, are they going to know what I'm talking about?
If they're close to the tar pits, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
All right.
But if they're close to the tar pits, you better not have them be smoking anything. I know these jazz guys.
Yeah, they smoke jazz cigarettes.
Yeah,
and
they could explode.
Yeah, they could explode. We don't want that.
Or mostly just smoking superheats all the chemicals in the air that you're breathing and makes you inhale more of them. So it's like extra carcinogens.
Oh my God.
So that's more what it is.
I need to go now and warn them.
So more than exploding, when it's just out in the air, it's more about poisoning yourself extra.
What you're breathing in, yeah. What about the sloth? What's his name?
Sid.
Sid, thank you, yes.
I didn't know sloths could survive in the cold. Whenever I see a sloth, it's always in the jungle or they're in a tree.
Well, yes. From what I understand, they did perish because of Ice Age.
Aren't they still around?
So tree sloths are still around, but ground sloths are extinct. So the types of sloths that we had here in LA are ground sloths. And sloths all evolved down in South America.
Okay.
And so there are some down in South America that are like elephant size.
Whoa.
That are much larger than we get here.
Right now?
No, they're all extinct now. Okay. I'm sorry.
There was elephant-sized sloths?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
I honestly want to see that more than a mammoth.
Yeah, I want to see that movie.
Let's move that up to the top of the fictional list.
Yeah, could you make that happen?
Can you make that happen?
I'll ask.
20 bucks.
Yeah.
I can
bribe you.
Slip you $20.
With all the power I have, I'll see what I can do.
You are the keeper of recreating animals, right?
The maitre d' to a recreation.
So ours aren't quite that large, but the couple of species that we had here in LA are still large enough that I could ride them into battle. Not that, you know, that would be amazing, but my favorite of them is the ones that we actually have statues in the park that are life size. That I could ride into battle, that have these amazing things called dermalossicles. That are these skin bones that are embedded in their hides, which we can tell from seeing pieces of hides from other sites than ours, because again, the hide doesn't get preserved at our site.
Okay.
But they're little pebbles of bone, and these are in the same family of things like armadillos. Okay. So they actually kind of work like armor.
Oh.
So there's like built-in chainmail on these guys.
Whoa.
So they have these massive claws, huge bodies. And eating mostly grass, but probably once they get to their adult size, not getting messed with.
Yeah,
by much. Vegan bodybuilder stoner sloth.
I mean, are they still slow? Because Sid was pretty quick in the film.
Sid was pretty quick in the film. Also, his body shape, I will say, is a lot of artistic.
License.
Liberty. Yes.
Yeah, he kind of had an ET vibe with his little gut.
Yeah. And the eyes.
And the eyes. And sticking like, out. Almost like a hammerhead shark head.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, I love him. I love the use of him to do a lot of the physicality jokes that they needed him to do.
Yes.
But yeah, our sloths don't look quite like that.
Okay.
But they do have really big claws, like he has, and shaggy fur. And even though we were first introduced to him in a tree, he probably would be one that would hang out more on the ground.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But these big sloths that you are one day going to ride into battle, did
if
they...
If we de-extinct
through
them.
Through LA.
Yeah, once we de-extinct them, would they move as we traditionally know sloths to move, like these very slow creatures? Or do these ground sloths, land sloths, have speed to them?
Well, we don't know for sure because all we find are their bones.
Oh, okay.
But it... Our best guess at this point is that they would be much more
agile
and quick. Oh, still probably not something that's going to be that you're going to worry about having to run away from.
Okay.
But at the same time, not something that you're going to be watching like a lava lamp move across the hillside.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and we will be right back.
Hey, everyone. This is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the streaming wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Okay, and how about these rhinos? They're still rhinos now, and they look pretty similar to the way they did in the film. And then I was reading that they have, like, a shovel horn that allowed them to, like, dig through snow for food and stuff like that.
So the rhinos that would have been alive at the same time as the woolly mammoths and the saber-toothed cats and the ground sloths, those would have been woolly rhinos that we don't have at the tar pits.
Oh.
But they're kind of just look like the rhinos that we have today, but bigger and hairier. But the rhinos that were in the movie are actually look more like maybe a brontothere, titanothere, things that are actually millions of years older than all of the other animals we're looking at.
Oh,
yeah, they weren't hairy, the rhinos.
Nope.
No.
And
is that what makes something woolly? The wool hair? Okay.
Absolutely.
Makes sense.
Got it. Just making sure I'm not completely dumb.
No,
absolutely.
90%.
Yeah.
Oh.
We go back.
It's an A.
But so they're definitely animals that are between dinosaurs and us. They're more recent than dinosaurs, which I'm happy about.
Yeah.
But again, Oligocene was much older than the Pleistocene, the Ice Age, the time period that we're looking at.
Okay. Yes. Also, those rhinos were at one point in a hot tub like
yes.
thing, like a hot spring.
Right.
Little mud but, pool.
Yeah, yes. Mud pool, yeah.
Do animals like that?
Yeah.
Is that a real thing?
I mean, I'm an animal and I like that, so...
Good point.
Yeah, good point.
I'll sit in a hot mud pool.
I'll sit in a La Brea tar pit and just chill.
The tar pit. Pit.
The Jar Jar Binks.
Well, those aren't... the tar pits aren't warm. Sorry.
Oh. I would have thought they
really?
Were warm.
Yeah.
Kind of sits out there
in
the sun.
If it sits out there in the sun, the surface is as warm as anything, you know, pavement in the sun would get.
Okay.
But it's not bubbling because it's hot. Sorry. It's bubbling because of those lighter gases coming through.
Oh.
So if you're trying to make a spa day, I would go somewhere with more of that thermal mud instead.
Right. We Spa it is.
Don't plug We Spa on my program. How dare you, sir?
You can cut it later.
No, I will not.
No. They will be shamed.
I will refuse. Annoying question. Has anyone fallen into the tar pits?
I mean, fallen in... is such a broad term, so yes.
Well, there's a big fence around it.
Yes, gate. And so there are multiple, spots on site, which we do keep fenced to try to reduce people and pets having issues.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like, there's people like me that still work there, and every once in a while, you know, if you're walking around somewhere, people do get stuck on occasion. But again, we have these fancy things that mammoths didn't have called shoes that I can undo the laces, and my friends with their opposable thumbs and big brains can come help me and laugh at me.
So, but the shoes
bats?
Stay in the pit?
You have a bunch of friends that
well,
are
well, you
bats?
Can eventually... lever them out, but tar pits work more like flypaper or like sticky mouse traps,
okay.
where you're getting stuck to the surface and dying of wonderful things like exposure or predation or dehydration. So you're at the surface for a while as you're slowly, horribly dying.
Oh, God. So, I thought in my head it was like quicksand or something, like you just sink into the pit and that's it.
Right. So let's say you lose your shoe in the pit.
what happens to the shoe?
Does it just remain there? Like, gets it out with a stick.
Yeah, I'll get it out when it's not attached.
Let's say you can't. Let's say you drop your shoe in there, and even as an experiment. What happens to that shoe?
Fossilized. The shoe depends on how much plastics it's made out of, probably.
Okay.
Because plastics made of oil would degrade much faster in an oil-based substance.
Okay.
But if it's something more leather-based, it'll probably last a bit longer. But again, we usually try to clean that sort of thing up because, again, people come and take lots of photos there, so they probably don't want a shoe in their family photo.
Yeah, so they call nice shoe.
People like me and say, hey, there's a shoe.
There's a shoe in that tar pit.
Yeah.
I have so many things to ask about, and I'm definitely not going to have time for all of this, but is there anything I wanted to ask, like, that you think is wrong in the movie or just things that you wanted to point out that you wanted to get to before I go on my, like, lightning round here of questions?
For me, it was just that I was very glad that there weren't any living dinosaurs in the original movie.
Great.
It was one of those things that I was just like, oh, thank you, because, again, it would have kind of undermined the, no, they're not the same time period when they kind of mix them up like that.
Yeah.
What year was Ice Age taking place?
I would guess it's probably set somewhere between around 10 to 20,000 years ago and probably somewhere in North America.
Well, okay.
Would be my guess.
Okay. And we've had multiple, like, they kind of goes in a pattern, right? Like Ice Age and then I don't know what the other ones.
The Bronze Age.
Holocene, is that?
Glaciers, like, and glacials and interglacials.
Okay.
Where things get warmer and cooler, but even the glaciers aren't going to get as far south as LA ever.
Mm. Okay, that makes sense. And are we, I read that we're, like, potentially making the next Ice Age that would come impossible because of pollution, CO2, yeah.
See, the thing about that is that climate change can do all sorts of funny things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when it gets too warm, that can make too much melt, and that can dump too much cold water in different ocean currents and cause all sorts of chaos, which we've been noticing these last couple of years.
Yeah.
And so at that point, while I am not a specialist in that particular thing, anything could happen. And we can make it too warm that then flips us back into a cold. Mm. I would just much more rather keeping it more where we are now. I like our weather right now.
Yeah, I like it too. Be nice if we protected the Earth. Oh, well.
So what do you guys believe in global warming and climate change?
Yeah.
We see evidence of it, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Just from the scientific community and, like, stuff like that.
And you think the Earth is round?
Round, yeah.
All right.
Correct. I've also seen evidence of that.
All right.
Are you convinced?
I encourage other people to see evidence of it too.
What do you think? Still no?
Not sold.
Okay. What about Snowball Earth? You know this phrase?
I've heard it mentioned before.
Okay.
It's definitely not something I know a lot about.
Okay.
But it's one of those things that people want to come and talk to us about the fence. And
sounds fun.
Yeah, right? Snowball Earth?
No, I'm good.
I hate the cold, so it's terrifying to me. But essentially, Snowball Earth has happened, they said, at least once. And I'm saying they as the internet, so I don't know how plausible or whatever. But
is it just winter all over the
globe? It's like a super ice age. Yeah, it's like during a regular ice age, like one third of the Earth is covered in snow. And then during Snowball Earth, it's like everything is snow.
Sick.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just wanted to bring it up, see if you had any Snowball Earth theories.
I'm sorry, I don't.
Oh, that's okay. It sounds ridiculous.
Yeah. I did see them open up for Radiohead about 10 years ago, though. They were really good.
Snowball Earth. What's your favorite Snowball Earth track? Okay, we were both...
Send us your favorite Snowball Earth track.
Oh, guys, please, in the iTunes review, definitely leave your favorite Snowball Earth track so that we can listen to them after. Then Eric will give his reviews. We saw at one point Sid accidentally create fire.
Yes.
Yes.
And that led us to talk about, like, do animals make fire? Does that kind of stuff happen? Do they have any sort of human-type advancements? So I went on a little bit of a research hunt.
Oh, yeah.
And I found some cool shit.
What'd you find, my man?
All right. Tell us. So, first of all, black kites, which is the name of a small hawk, they're nodding like that's a real thing.
Didn't know that.
I'll pick up on that. They get these sticks, so they don't make fire. But they will use fire to their advantage. They will pick up sticks that are on fire and move them sometimes like a mile away to, like, trap lizards and insects and stuff and then eat them.
They can fly with things that are on fire through the air and keep them on fire?
Yes. And then, like, strategically place them to
trap and
to hunt. Right.
how can you fly with this and have it not go out?
I think it was like bundled in some like dryer grassy things, if I recall. But I want to go back and look at that more now.
Pretty
that
cool.
Hella intuitive.
Yeah, and it gets deeper. So orangutans have been spotted spearfishing. They can't catch anything that's alive and moving around, but if there's like a dead fish or like something in the riverbed, apparently they can throw a spear and wreck it, which I thought was sweet.
Wow.
Dolphins, which we all know are very smart, they, I guess, were like trying to like look for food and dig on the sea floor, and sometimes there's like stuff that can sting you or harm you, and so they started wearing a mask. They used this like sea sponge on their face to like protect themselves.
Oh, I hadn't heard of
as they're digging for stuff. Very cool. And then the last one, I saw a video of this last one. Bonobos, they do make fire, okay? But not from scratch. They get assisted tools. So humans give them like a match book, a matchbox.
Yeah.
And they know now how to take out a match, strike it, and light a bundle of sticks. They know how to collect sticks. They break them up. They put them into like a fireplace, essentially. And they teach each other how to light these matches. Mm-hmm. Go look it up. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
There's some videos on the dodo. They make marshmallows. I saw they put marshmallows on like the end of a stick and roast them and eat them.
That's the coolest thing I've ever heard.
I know.
I mean, friends taught me how to do that, so.
Right. We're not that far off.
No, 98%, right?
Yeah. Want to talk about a bunch of other things, like I said. I mean, here at the Tar Pits, you guys have all sorts of cool attractions, it seems. There's a big mammoth named Zed. You guys have?
It was part of Project 23. He's kind of our poster child of the project.
And actually, let's talk about Project 23 for just one second, because I read briefly about it with Eric yesterday, where like there was a construction site happening and you guys started finding stuff and creating these like tree boxes.
And how was Michael Jordan involved?
Yeah.
Not that I know of, unfortunately.
Okay.
More of a LeBron thing.
And so it's one of those things where actually LACMA, the art museum that shares the park with us, was building an underground parking garage back in 2006.
Okay.
And if you need to dig underground next to one of the largest urban deposits of fossils in the world, you're probably going to find fossils.
Makes sense, yeah.
But again,
just so happened to be there.
I mean, there wasn't like a sign that said, don't die east of Ogden. I'm pretty sure that is not a thing that happened.
Right.
40,000 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm fairly confident. I wasn't there. I don't have evidence to the contrary.
Sure.
But so basically kind of like playing Battleship. Uh-huh. Anywhere in that area, you could have fossils.
Okay.
So if you fill the entire board with pegs, you're going to find everything in that space.
That's how I play Battleship, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, you always win.
Yep. That's right.
I play it with fossils on my board.
Sort of, dear.
Just different.
Yeah, that's kind of a job.
Little different sets of teeth on my little Battleship board. So, I play by myself.
So you win and lose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah, they were digging. They were making a huge garage. They were making a parking structure. Mm-hmm. And they started finding stuff and then, like, protecting it and then taking it out.
So there are teams on site known as paleo monitors that are paleontologists specially trained to go before, during, and after the big excavation equipment.
Okay.
And so they're the ones. We're very fortunate that our fossils tend to come in clumps due to a unique combination of both biological and geological reasons. And so they're able to delineate the edges of these clumps. And they brought in a third company, a landscape company that specializes in moving live trees by building boxes around the root balls.
Wow.
Built boxes around the entire sections of earth themselves, crane them up, move them over our side of the park. So we're digging in the ground, on the ground, and they came over in 23 boxes, which is why we call it Project 23. We're very fancy with our naming schemes.
Very good. Great. Okay, so they move these 23 boxes, and now you and a team, I gather, are what, going through, preparing them, trying to see what they are? Do you know now what all of them are?
Not all of them, because everything you can really only see the edge surfaces. The order that we go through the boxes is kind of a combination of research goals mixed with emergency room triage.
Oh.
Kind of trying to protect the most fossils as long as possible. It was originally projected to be a 5-year project starting in August of 2008.
Okay.
Spoilers, it's taking a little bit longer.
Right. Sure.
But that's because there's so many fossils.
Wow.
It's a good problem to have.
So that's what I was doing this morning before I came here. And that's what I'm going to go do in the afternoon when I get back.
Nice.
That's what my coworkers, some of my volunteers are doing right now.
Cool.
Is actually going through those boxes, you know, carefully, methodically, and uncovering fossils. Because again, we tend to get scrambles of thousands and tens of thousands of fossils all jumbled together. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those where it's like, cool, I can see that that's a femur, a thigh bone from a saber-toothed cat.
Wow.
But we won't be able to get that out until we get the sloth rib out, which we can't get out until we get this direwolf skull out, which we can't get out until we get this coyote femur out, which we can't get out until we get this turtle.
How many species are there?
Hundreds. Hundreds.
Wow.
Of animals, plants, insects, wow. Everything from shrews to juniper seeds.
This was a hopping neighborhood back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like the Times Square of...
Dead animals.
Dead animals. Dead animal bones.
And I wanted to also mention, you said dire wolves because mm-hmm. as the Game of Thrones fans, or Game of Bones fans, if you will, know that, like, I always thought that was a fictional creature. And then upon this movie and this research, that was a real thing that we just don't have anymore? Or do we still have dire wolves?
I know. Dire wolves are extinct. And Bummer. The Game of Thrones versions are more like Dungeons & Dragons style dire wolves. Oh. So our dire wolves aren't quite that big. Oh. But imagine a gray wolf, but like the linebacker version. So okay. They're very robust. Uh-huh. I still am okay with them being extinct because I walk to home around here.
Sure, yeah.
But at the same time, a real thing that lived here in Los Angeles tens of thousands of years ago.
Man.
Wow.
Wow.
So a dire wolf being real is valid.
Yes.
Does that make Game of Thrones real?
Everything else in Game of Thrones is real? Dragons?
There's definitely some plausibility issues with some of the other things, I would say. And I don't have any evidence of things like dragons.
90% real?
Yeah. I think that's what you said.
Yeah. Moving on.
All right. I mean, Eric, you have some questions. I was going to ask about the Tarfest Members Lounge.
I mean, nothing I was going to ask. Sounds more cool than that.
Is there anything cooler than the Tarfest Members Lounge? I saw that on the website and had to ask about it.
Wow.
Tarfest is, so we're in the middle of Hancock Park, which is a 23.6 acre park that is run by the County of Los Angeles.
Okay.
So we also have lots of events that feature in our park. And so it's one of those where I love it because I get to experience all sorts of new and exciting things.
Yeah.
But it also brings in a more diverse audience than we would have gotten if we were just museums on site.
Right.
So I like kind of cross-pollinating between that. So Tarfest is one of the events that has been in our park for the last couple of years. It has, you know, music and vendors and drinking and music and artists and that sort of thing.
Snowball Earth played last year.
Yeah, they headlined.
Sick.
Yeah, that was...
They better play next year at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they will.
Someone make it and come, please.
Eric and I will make an EP.
Yeah,
Snowball I will Earth. Come see you perform.
Yes. All right, great. And speaking of, they have Ice Age Encounters. And yes. Titans of the Ice Age 3D people can come see at Liberated Tar Pits, the Tartar Pit.
So Titans of the Ice Age is an abbreviated version of a documentary that was made. And it's one of those that like has both animation and interviews. And it was made in concert with a couple other different institutions. But ours is more cut down to be more just the Liberated Tar Pits specific versions. I'm in it for like 2 seconds. So you can be like, whoa. Oh, my gosh, she's a movie star.
Yeah.
And this is Hollywood after all.
I didn't know that either.
Sitting here with a movie star. I wouldn't have said all that dumb crap I said in the past hour.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right. You can speak to my agent.
Oh, okay.
I don't actually have an agent. And but it's one of those things where it's kind of a newer video that kind of gives people a broader view of a lot of the animals and things that we're looking at.
Great.
And the Ice Age Encounter show, though, I definitely recommend you come see, not just because some of my friends perform it, but we actually have in concert originally with Henson Studio building some of these life-size puppets.
Wow.
So the saber-toothed cat, the main one, it actually has human inside of it.
Whoa.
And one human helping to control some of the face and that sort of thing. And so they actually do an interactive show about...
Love that.
That's cool.
So that's really fantastic.
We will certainly be going to see that, I assure you.
Yes.
That sounds great. The dodo, I was going to ask about the dodo. There's a funny scene.
So dodos, I don't think that the evidence we have for why they went extinct is consistent with that of the movie.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure they lived on for many hundreds and thousands of years.
Yeah, that's what I saw, which is so strange to me that this little bird was able to survive and yet all these like really powerful mammals were not.
It was on an island. That was both the secret to its success and downfall.
Oh.
Is that they were kind of on an island doing their own thing. And then Western folk showed up and went, hey,
I'm hungry.
Yep. And also, like, we have dogs and rats. Look, we just destroyed all your babies, bye. That's part of the downfall of the dodo. But I liked, because again, at the time, 2002, this is also a nod to the, like, Y2K preppers right. and some of that mentality where yes. it's just kind of very not always logically based. Like, I have 3 melons to get me through the Ice Age.
Right, right. Yeah, there is a line of, like, we're going to be underground for 3,000 years, something like that.
Right.
And to prepare for that, you brought 3 melons?
That's all they need.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, just some things I was ruminating on since we watched it.
Yeah.
No one ate anything in just, the movie yes, except a baby.
ate a watermelon.
A slice of watermelon the entire film.
Right.
No one else ate anything else, and that baby, realistically, would be gone in a second, right? Because it's perished. So cold.
I feel like that is they're just trying to imply that, oh, we started figuring out how to find food for this weird pink baby thing. That
okay.
Also, yes, we definitely didn't see Diego eat anything,
right.
the obligate carnivore of the group.
Right.
We do see Sid eat a pine cone, very unhappily.
That's true.
Does a pine cone have any nutrients?
The little pine nuts inside probably would, but ooh. I would not want it to be your main food source
yeah.
if you're, you know, a mammoth.
Right.
Or a Diego.
Diego.
Diego needs to
eat. He is fantastic,
eat.
Isn't he?
Is that Antonio Banderas, the other one?
Yeah.
Am I making that up?
They talked about using him originally, but I don't believe it is. I believe it is...
He's an impersonator.
I can't think of his name right now.
Hmm.
But another great voice actor.
Frederick Banderas.
Yeah, his brother. And Jack Black.
That's right.
Yes, as Zeke.
We love Jack Black around here.
Love the Black.
Jack, if you're listening, come on in.
Come on down.
Let's do Ice Age 2.
Or Jumanji.
Oh, let's do Jumanji.
Happily.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I mean... I have weird questions about saber-toothed tigers eating babies. I don't know if that's appropriate or necessary at all.
So that's another thing that could be useful. At the Tar Pits here in L.A., we don't have any evidence whatsoever of people and any of these extinct animals in the same place at the same time.
I asked that question last night.
Yes, yeah. I remember that.
So could these people and animals coexist?
Not even Neanderthal?
In other places, in other continents and that sort of thing, some of these animals interacted.
But North
and
America,
they probably may have. But at the Tar Pits, at least, we don't have any evidence of people and the animals interacting.
Wow.
So if they went extinct, it was because of weather?
Probably a variety of reasons.
Okay.
It's one of those things that people for extinctions try to kind of simplify and be like, it was this one thing. I figured it out, tied a bow.
Comets, dinosaurs.
But I kind of think of it more like a car accident. Like, yes, one car hit another, but someone's messing, you know, texting someone on their phone. Someone's trying to mess the lid of their coffee cup. Like, there's so many different factors that go into it.
Yeah.
It's probably changes in climate and changes in the plants available, which change everything up the food chain. Change in the other large animals that are competing for the same resources.
Yeah, like, got it.
You
know, a woolly mammoth hit a sloth with its car.
Yep.
And then yada, yada, yada.
Somebody in the passenger side was playing with a katana.
Yep. Yada, yada, yada. The LACMA was erected.
Yeah, and now here we are.
And now here we are.
Great. Okay, well, this was great. I think people can definitely go to La Brea Tar Pits, the Tar Pit.
Jar Jar Binks.
They can go to the Jar Jar Binks website and check out all that cool stuff you guys have. You have ancient turkeys and horses and stuff like that.
Turkey's one of our most common large birds that we have there, actually, because they're social and walk around on the ground.
Great.
So if you're walking around there.
I didn't see a turkey when we were there.
We didn't really look much, if you remember.
Gotta come back.
I'm down.
Yeah, well, let's go back.
It's bing bong huge. It's gonna be great.
Yep.
And right now there's a special lot of mammoths and mastodons specifically because we have a traveling exhibit in concert with the Chicago Field Museum that's specifically focusing on mammoths and mastodons. And it's through September and it's quite lovely. And I recommend you come visit.
Absolutely.
And then a period of time and I can show you that too.
Yes.
Awesome. I want to see mastodon in concert. And
Snowball Earth is going to open.
And it's going to be great.
Okay, great. We do a little plug section. Obviously, the Tar Pits. Is there anything else you want to tell people about that they should check out?
Oh, that was mostly it because I didn't realize. I'm sorry.
No, that's good.
Perfect.
I'm glad that we covered it several times because I really...
Natural plugs.
We're digging all the time. Like, we're usually digging 361 days a year.
Wow.
That's another thing that people don't always remember.
Yeah.
Like, we are an active, ongoing...
Great.
Still work happening.
New discoveries every day.
Yeah.
Love it. Love
Very
it.
Very cool.
Okay. Eric Julian Jakowicz, something you want to tell the folks at home about?
You can listen to our podcast, Success Express.
Yes.
And when is this coming out?
This is coming out Tuesday, a week from today.
Okay. We are also in a band called The Cooties, and we're playing the Nashville Comedy Festival.
Yes.
On April 8th.
April 9th.
April 9th. Hey. Flying in April 8th.
If you're in Nashville,
come on down.
It's our first Cooties Nashville experience.
It's going to be a fun time.
Oh, yeah.
And then we're playing Ojai on Friday, but you won't be.
No, that's in the past now.
Ojai was great.
Thank you, Ojai.
Thank you, Ojai.
All right, awesome. Thank you both so much. Maybe we'll do an Ice Age 2 Dawn of the Dinosaur.
Is that Electric Boogaloo?
I feel like a third one was dinosaurs.
Oh, okay. Oh, Continental Drift?
Yes.
Wasn't that the second one?
They kind of blurred together for me after the first one.
I honestly, I don't even think I've seen them.
Oh.
Yeah. Is that, am I making a mistake?
We can have a movie party.
Yeah. Okay. Ice Age 3, Tokyo Drift. Let's do it.
We'll be back for Ice Age 3, Tokyo Drift. Thank you guys so much and see you next time.
All right.
I thought I'd mix it up and do the credits with a vocoder auto-tune sound. So here we go. 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3. Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh, Kate Baker, and E.J. Gullett are the social media producers. And the executive for Diego is Brett Kushner. You can follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show. Oh. You can follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show.
See you next time.
Bye.